It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Want to weigh in on what's officially considered a healthy diet? Well, now's your chance. The 2020-2025 Dietary Guidelines for America are open for public comment. Our guest helps us understand the significance of the dietary guidelines and how they impact individuals' lives and help shape policy. What do you think are the most important things to include in the Dietary Guidelines for Americans? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Beth Olson is an extension specialist and an associate professor of nutrition at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Beth, good morning.
Good morning.
The Dietary Guidelines for Americans are set by the federal government every 5 years or so. Can you explain what these guidelines are and what they're supposed to do?
Yes, these are set every 5 years, as you said, and they are to underlie all policies, programs, educational programs, and the like that come out from the federal government. So this would include things like the school lunch and breakfast program, the WIC program, which helps families with limited incomes for their moms and their children. But it's also used by others. It's used by state and local agencies that provide nutrition education. It's also used by educators and people like myself that work with agencies like Extension.
And the process, what's the process for creating these guidelines? How do they, where do they originate, and how does this work?
So two agencies work together, the U.S. Departments of Agriculture and Health and Human Services, and they convene a committee every 5 years. What was a little different this year, and that's why there was a bit more news about this round, was instead of convening a panel and then having this committee or panel of experts determine what should be updated from the last dietary guidelines, the agencies looked at all their programs and said, what topics, what groups of people do we need to cover in these guidelines? And they came up with a list of questions, which they put out for public comment, and then adapted those or adjusted those as needed after the comments came in. And then based on that, they gathered up the experts they needed to answer all those questions. And those experts will be meeting at the end of this month for the first time. And they'll meet periodically over the next year, year and a half or so, and put together the report, which the agencies will use to issue the final guidelines.
So as you point out, there's been more opportunity for public input for the new guidelines, and so far over, 6,000 comments submitted so far. Other than helping to shape who is at the table for the discussion, how will these comments impact the new guidelines?
Well, the comments for the committee have already come in, and for the topics. So those are done, but throughout the whole process, there will be public meetings and the public can still continue to weigh in. And this includes not just people like, you and I who might write in our individual comment. It will include doctors. It will include professional organizations like the American Dietetic Association, the other scientific groups, the American Heart Association, American Academy of Pediatrics. So a lot of experts as groups will come together and say, what is it we need to do for people's health related to nutrition? And they'll put their comments in as well. It'll also involve comments from industry. Industry will say, you want to make this recommendation about changing our food supply, and this is what it would mean to our companies and how we act. And the government does look at that, all of those kind of comments as well, when they make their recommendations of how they're going to do the guidelines.
One interesting thing for me was for the first time, the dietary guidelines will have advice for pregnant women and infants under 2 years old. Why haven't the guidelines included this information in the past, and what made them include it this time around?
Well, I think in the past it has been felt that those groups needed special recommendations, the general recommendations for the healthy Americans over two that we've done in the past wouldn't apply. Those groups often usually have regular checkups. Pregnant women and babies have well baby visits. So they are seen by a doctor who can help them with their diet and also meet a lot of specialized needs that they're going to have. But I think that we are recognizing that health starts very early, and we need a general health advice on nutrition out for everybody. And so we needed to include it this time. Also, we have federal programs, WIC, as I mentioned, that helps limited families with small children. We have the child care feeding program. We have school breakfast and school lunch. We have a lot of programs in which advice is going to go out to families, which include small babies and pregnant women. And so we needed to provide more uniform guidance across those groups as best we can.
Beth Olson is an extension specialist and an associate professor of nutrition at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're talking about new dietary guidelines which are going to come out from the federal government. Beth, you study how dietary guidelines affect low-income people. Tell us more about that.
Yes. So often I think people read the dietary guidelines and it's about just, they think, nutrition and food. But we have programs, including here at University of Wisconsin-Madison in our Division of Extension, that do a lot of nutrition education as well. And the guidelines inform our nutrition education. We work with families in general in our communities, out in our counties, but we also have a couple of large programs that provide nutrition education to low-income families. And this helps those families select the healthiest diets that they can in the context of their local communities, the kind of stores they have, where their children go to school, what they have access to. And it uses other information out of the guidelines around food safety, physical activity, also things like budgeting. What's the best way to spread my food dollars over the course of the month so that I can provide nutritious food for my family for the entire month? And so the guidelines help us develop the messages that are used in that education, and also to make sure that that information is uniform across all the programs, so they're not hearing something different in one program or from their doctor or from their school than they're hearing from another nutrition education program.
What's your sense of how the average person on the street, if you will, understands the dietary guidelines? I mean, do people at the granular level, I guess we could say, if we're statisticians, how much attention do people really pay to these guidelines?
You know, I think people pay attention to the information that comes out. I don't think they always know where it's coming from. I haven't seen research recently. I was involved in some years ago in which we went out and talked to people about the dietary guidelines, and people understood the messages. They'd heard them. They didn't necessarily understand that they were dietary guidelines or that they came from the federal government. And to that point, we don't really care. We want people to hear messages about nutrition, understand that they're important, hear them from a lot of authoritative sources, sources they respect, and act on them. Whether they understand they're under this larger umbrella of the dietary guidelines or not isn't quite as important. But when we ask people, most people know, you know, I should eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I should eat whole grains. They've heard the messages.
In our last minute here, in the past, the USDA has been accused of ignoring scientific evidence and bowing to the food industry's influence when they put out the dietary guidelines. For example, cancer researchers and other experts criticized the 2015 to 2020 guidelines for not limiting processed meat intake in spite of evidence linking these things to cancer. Is this a concern?
I think that it's a concern of many groups about what information is used. How strong is that information before we begin to tell people it in the dietary guidelines? How do we communicate which groups are most at risk for certain things versus others? I've known many of the scientists and experts who've been on the dietary guidelines committee, and I think they do an excellent job reviewing all of the research. I think the government it has many influences on it, including its own administration, which has them treading carefully. I think the scientists do a good report. That report's available. We can always watch it. You know, what isn't included in the final dietary guidelines. But I think in general, they do a very good job. The information is excellent. And there's also a lot of information from other sources that people can pull in order to put the dietary guidelines in context and say, what is most important for me and how I eat?
Thank you so much, Beth Olson, for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
Beth Olson is an extension specialist and associate professor of nutrition at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Just ahead, Eau Claire County considering an extension on a six-month moratorium on the expansion and creation of large-scale livestock facilities. We'll talk about why that ban was instituted in the first place. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.